Welcome to our coffee break, everybody. Happy Friday. It's the 1st of May, 2020. Mm-hmm. Hello. Oh, Bill, I see you've got the webcam working in the backyard.
Yeah. And he's kind of in a moving platform.
Yes. He's on a dolly track. We got Solbu there. We got Peter Lewis. We got BP9's chair and BP9 now joining us as well. Oh, and somebody's sharing their screen. Who's doing that?
What happened?
What is that? Who did that and how? That's interesting.
It's not me.
It's Peter.
But how did he take over the whole session?
No, he's not. The default is that if someone is sharing the screen, it comes up full.
And how do I? Well, see, this is so you hear about people being like, oh, well, Zoom has problems. No, it's just you got to know how to do it, and I don't know how to do it. Annotate. Don't ever do that again. Apparently there's a request remote support button that lets somebody take over the entire screen session. So I'm going to look for a way to disable that because that's just stupid for what we're doing. Yeah. Everybody good?
Yes.
Good, good.
Good morning. You're doing fine.
Hi, BP9.
And Peter's nice. Dog's doing fine too, from what I can hear.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That's why Bill's pets are nice gallivanting deer.
Yeah, they're just quiet.
I see.
Yeah, they just quietly eat away all your vegetable garden.
And they're looking and they're looking this way, wondering who all these people who came to visit Bill.
Mm-hmm. What you looking at? What you looking at?
Oh, we made it through another week, guys. This is good. Yay. This is good. Yeah. I'm like way behind on video editing.
Are you?
And Norway is starting to open up after these crazy days. So the new distance is 3 feet and not 6. From May the 7th. One can gather at public places where there is someone in charge, up to 50 people. So things are going the right way.
That's not the case here. We're gonna be sheltering in place for a while yet. And although we keep hearing news that our state is likely to start opening up, it's going to be extremely carefully and cautiously done. So, yeah. But we're not talking about that today. We're going to talk about something else. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. All the other stations are talking about that, but our coffee break is just to get our mind on other things.
Absolutely.
You're going to red flag that today. I said you're going to red flag out today.
I got to work today.
Have you got your plane time yet?
No. Oh. I did order an Odroid C4 from Bo.
I think I'm going to have to put an order in too. I've got some.
I got a notification from Ameridroid yesterday that said they now have stock. I'm like, okay, that's a sign that I need to order one. So okay. I did.
Yes. Yeah. Very good.
I'm disappointed that the C2 is being discontinued. Bill, you mentioned that the C2 is... Oh, it just vanished.
It just disappeared.
Oh, because he just teleported it to me. Oh, I like that case. Is that...
It's actually a Raspberry Pi 4 case that's,
it's open on the sides. Has that got a fan on it, Mushman? Yes. Oh, very
so is
nice.
That... It's... The same, it's not the same form factor, or not the same, like, I.O., but...
It's the same format as the Pi 3, not the Pi 4, but Yeah, because it's got, I'm going to have to take it off. I've got, it's got a barrel jack for power.
Oh, right. Yeah. I wonder if that means you can easily adapt a KKSB case, because I'm dying to put it in a proper case.
Yeah, it's possible, probably.
Cool.
But and it's got full HDMI connector, not those micros that the 4 has. Hey, Ron.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Hey, Ron.
Now, these are Atom processors, right? These are not Intel processors, correct?
These are AMLogics.
AMLogics. So yeah. They're a different instruction set. They're a different instruction set to Intel, for instance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So any Linux packages that I would want to install would have to have been compiled for that instruction set.
They're ARM-based. They have to be ARM-based, yeah.
Got it. Okay. Okay.
Which is, you know, that...
Go ahead, Robbie.
I was just going to say, like, that was when the Raspberry Pi first came out, there weren't a lot of ARM users out there. So, but now it's like pretty much any modern project is available on the ARM architecture. So I haven't really encountered any trouble that way in the past maybe year or two.
You know which one isn't? Discord.
Are you kidding?
Discord. There's and no I guess, ARM packages. Like, for Discord.
I mean, there's the obvious ones like VirtualBox and, you know, stuff like that. But that's because it's x86 emulation, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No Discord though. You got to do it in the browser if you want to put it on an ARM thing. The good thing with this, I like the idea of having EMMC. You know.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I went to the download site to get the Ubuntu 20.04 from Odroid, and none of the links work.
But yeah, didn't you say Ubuntu 20.04 wasn't very stable? Yeah, or somebody said that.
It's brand new. It's never going to be stable right out at the gate, but I don't have problems with it. The thing is I did order two EMMC cards, and they came preloaded with the 20.04 on it.
Oh, nice. So, okay. Yeah. What's the latest stable version? 1804, I guess.
1804 for LTS, yeah.
Okay, got it. That's probably what I would go with then. I think I've got 1604 installed right now.
I usually wait for a month after a new version of the distro I use comes out, because then the most serious bugs have been taken care of.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember what. I think it's 1604 is what I've got currently installed. But now, the new every... LTS version comes out every, 4 years, doesn't it?
No, 2 years.
It's 2 years?
Yeah.
Okay. So 2004 is going to be the next LTS version.
It is the next LTS. So it's only a matter of a little bit of time for 1604. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I too am keen on that EMMC as opposed to SD, because that's the biggest downfall, I think, of the Raspberry Pi, if you can call it a downfall. Not really.
Yeah, we've talked about
that
already.
Yeah, we have.
Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. It's kind of redundant to say it, but yeah, the C4 is like a Raspberry Pi 4 in so many ways, but at EMMC.
Yeah.
So.
And anyway, besides, so you know, the other devices like the Pinebook and Pinebook Pro and eventually the Pine Time all do EMMC as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? Yeah, okay.
I meant
the Pine phone. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got to get into this EMMC stuff, so I think I might have to just get me an Odroid.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, get started. Yeah. On that.
My favorite board is, for the longest time, has been the XU4. Mm-hmm. I think just as an all round, like, use this for everything that you normally would use a little Debian server for. It's really, really good. But the C4 could give it a run for its money. I don't know how they stand up. How do they look as far as giggle score, Bill, like between the XU4 and the C4?
The C4 in almost every way is just a hair below the XU4.
Oh, okay. So XU4 is still on top.
Yeah, it's still above XU4,
with
the N2 above that. Yeah.
But just barely, right?
Barely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it still holds its own as being a really good little Debian server. The XU4 has been out for years.
Yeah.
It feels like 2 years anyways. So
it sounds like, now, Marshman, you've already showed us your farm of SBCs.
They just keep growing.
They do. So I guess you just keep adding a new SBC when you've got something new to deploy, right? So
I add them when they come out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice.
You saw all those in use. Those are all NEMs. Yes. I have a bunch that are still in those plastic drawers that are just sitting there.
And I guess the point is that you only run NEMs on those particular devices.
Pretty much. I tested for Robbie. So.
Okay. Okay.
Ultimate bug tester.
Yep.
I wasn't originally going to jump right on the C4 bandwagon, but then as soon as you mentioned that the C2 was going bye-bye, and then it's like, oh man, that means I have to get a C4 immediately because I'm going to have to port NEMs to it. I'm going to have to replace the C2.
You run them 24/7?
Yeah. Yeah, they're
yeah, mine are all 24/7. All the time. My like I have an XU4 is my pie hole.
It's like a light show. It's like Star Trek down there.
Yeah, and I guess you run them all off of UPS.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's tempting.
We lost power last week, and we were discussing it. Funny, it seems every time we discuss something like that, something happens. So we lost the power, and I believe the UPS said I still had well over 200 minutes of power for all those SBCs running. So
beautiful. None of my UPS batteries are anywhere near that good. I won't get, even with just an SBC, I won't get anywhere near that kind of endurance out of them.
It's fairly new, mine. Mine is fairly new.
So. They don't draw a lot of power, so... I'm eager to see how this 1U unit comes together. I did order the parts for that too, for the power units. So hopefully that'll all come together. But finding out that figuring that I got to go only with 5-volt boards. And I noticed, Bill, that the C4 allows anywhere from 5.5 to 14 volts. So that is your board, my friend.
Yeah, but 5.5 volts is not 5.5 volts, Robbie.
A little bit, chances of damage. Yeah. So, but it's not going to go into the 1U because it takes. I'm going to use a 12 volt 2 amp for that one. So, we'll see how this chassis, how I can fill it with a bunch.
You just have to get two 1U shelves, one for all the 5-volt. SBCs and one for all the 12-volt SBCs.
Oh, don't tempt me, dude.
Hey, that's how I would do it. You know, put a big old sign on it, 12 volts on one, 5 volts on the other. And
make sure they don't cross.
Yes.
don't cross the streams, whatever you do.
that's not a bad idea. Yeah, have a second 1U.
Yeah, why not? I say do it, man. Come on, let's go.
You know what's interesting about it? So you think about, well, don't cross the power. Mm. Well, I'm bringing the power in from a 19-volt power adapter, and then I'm stepping it down to 5 volts.
I've been saying that all along. You can step it down to 5 volts just as easily.
Well, that's the thing. So even if you accidentally swapped the cable, the step down is still going to take it down to 12 volts.
Well, as long as it will take the 19 volts input, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I'm re-ending all the cables. So, so it's going to be just a power jack on the back of the server barrel connector that I can plug into, and then I'll just tie the cable onto the chassis or something with a tie wrap.
Sounds like a good idea to me. I'm thinking two one unit shelf.
It's too bad. Like the one that I bought was on special for $30.
Yeah,
and of course. At that price though, they sold out. So I don't think I don't know if I'll ever see that.
Should have grabbed it while you had the chance, man.
Now that you mention it, I feel terrible. Yeah. Should have bought three just to have a backup one.
Sure enough. Absolutely. Why not?
You know what? If I had a third one, I'd put a cluster board, Pine 64 cluster board in that one because it's the right form factor.
Sounds like a great idea.
That would be perfect. That's seven SBCs right there.
You've got plenty of rack space there, don't you?
I do, yeah. And it's a double-sided rack. So take the height of it and times it by two.
Nice.
Put the Zenith out on the 501, 546 Zenith. So if you do plug 12 volts in here, probably just to quit the power supply rather than blow up your bones.
Yeah. Well, with the step down, though, it'll take it to whatever voltage I've set it at, no matter what I plug into it.
You've got to be careful if you do that because you could wreck something. But actually, one day you could be in a funny mood to plug the wrong one in and bang, you got nothing.
Yeah, but that's Robbie's point. You can plug that 19 volts into any one of those step down converters and it'll work. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it won't matter.
And Peter suggests that plugging in the wrong voltage could damage your equipment. Marshman, any comments?
No. Yeah, Marshman, do tell.
That's one of the neat things about a step down, though, is that you can set it to 5 volts or 5.2 volts or whatever you want, and no matter what your input is. So if it's, I can plug 15 volts into that, I can plug 12 volts or 19, and it's still going to step it down to 5.2.
I thought you'd plug a 12 volt into the board, each board, sorry. Like 5 volts into one board, 12 volts into another type of board. I'm sorry, I missed what you meant, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. But with the step down, it's going to just give you a different amperage, but the voltage will still be stable. So yeah, I'll get 5.2 volts with more amps if I plug in a more powerful power supply. So I like that idea.
Well, to give credit for the 12 volt fiasco to Odroid, I did plug in a 12 volt power supply to an XU4, which is supposed to have a 5 volt. I didn't realize. And the board kept working, but the regulator blew, so it was wonky, but it still worked. I didn't release the blue smoke, so
the regulator was on the board, though, right?
Yeah.
So could you replace the regulator, or did you just toss the board? And
I still have the board. It's marked for testing only.
Yeah.
But it didn't blow up, so.
I'm still trying to figure out the best. I don't have a use case, I don't think, for having multiple SBCs, you know, deployed.
Because you haven't played with them yet.
So convince me. What I've got every time I see an SBC, whether it be a Raspberry Pi or an Odroid, what I see is another Linux instance, right?
So we have this mentality right now.
Yeah.
Bigger, faster, stronger, more powerful, more RAM, more hard drive space. That's our mentality as server admins. So I want a server that's this big and this powerful and is able to run a whole bunch of virtual machines and a whole bunch of instances and a whole bunch of tasks on that one piece of equipment.
So I don't have that yet. I'm not there here yet.
But I'm saying in general, that's kind of our mentality as a industry. So single board computers take that and flip it on its head and say, okay, let's take a different approach of this heavy consumption device, the traditional server, mm-hmm. which draws a lot of power and costs a lot of money comparatively mm-hmm. to run, like the ongoing operating expenses, mm-hmm. and instead create single task devices that are all individual Linux machines. So you've got mm-hmm. a Raspberry Pi here that is my DNS server. So where this server could be DNS, website, file serving, virtual machines, everything else, well, the Raspberry Pi is just my DNS server. And then you've got another one that is just my Apache instance, and another one that's my MySQL or MariaDB. So you've got purpose-built appliances that take up a lot less energy. They can be powered by something like I'm talking about, like this step down controller, and they're purpose built. So if one goes down, you can just pop out the card, pop in another card, and be back up and running really, really fast. And it's mm-hmm. only that one service that goes down.
718-718-705, you could probably replace it. You know, they're probably about a buck each. It's an LM7805 is a replacement for those things, I think you'll find.
Well, yeah, Peter, that would make sense if that was the part
breaking up too much to make.
Who, me?
No, it'd be, I think, better now. Yeah, I'm sorry, my voice was a bit. If the part was probably, it's the probably industrial one that they normally use, is an LM7805. That's the usual one amp one, that's the usual one they use, and just replace them. And if you haven't cooked anything else, because it goes through like bloody wildfire if you blow the regulator, you just choose everything else up. So you may be lucky or maybe not lucky, Bill, or not, you know.
As long as that's the part that's actually on the device, and as long as it's easy enough to get it off the board, it might be surface mounted.
Yeah, if it's surface mounted, you could just say goodbye to their horrible things. If you can unsolder it, yeah. But it will have to bark then on the regulator. You have to go and look for it sometimes. It should be written on the regulator. It's actually written on there as a number. It's LM7085.
Speaking of backup power, I remember reading an article 15 years ago. there was I don't remember what it was, but it was a software utility. It may be an office suite, which one of the features it said it had was that it could detect if the computer lost power. And in the last second of having power, one of the features was that it automatically did a save, an auto save. How well that actually worked, I have my doubts.
Must be like a capacitor of some sort.
You can't save much in 1 second.
Flush your RAM.
The pad that I built has a voltage regulator, a verbal one, where you can adjust, but in front of it is a transistor which turns the thing on and off, and that's controlled an SCR when there's an excess current flow in a resistor, a sensing resistor, it turns the power supply off, and it protects any problems. It could turn off in milliseconds, because fuses don't protect equipment. They're too slow to respect electronic transistors will blow quicker than a fuse would. If you give it enough time, you know, transistors blow in milliseconds, fuses blow in hundreds of milliseconds. It takes time for them to warm up and blow their little bit of wire. So you know, to remember that, you know, fuses don't protect you really. You have to do it electronically, I think, to make sure the thing is, because you're protected. This thing is called rollover power supplies, which basically, when the current goes up, they just take the current down to zero. The voltage is still there, but the current is zero. When you put a load on it, they just go down to zero. And they turn all the ones that I use, which you just turn the power off by turning the voltage off the regulator. That protects the circuit totally, yeah. Are they looking at time, Robbie?
So, Marshman, I have a question. A quick one for you, Marshman. With all those SBCs that you've got at your location, at your house, apart from the ones that are running NEMs, what else are you using them for? Again, I'm trying to get use cases. I'm trying to figure out use cases.
Are there any other uses?
No, I just load them up and play with them. I actually have a Pi cluster. I have 8 Raspberry Pi 3s in a cluster. I'm looking to replace those. That's where I was hoping the C4 would really shine. So I want to get them try and play around with parallel programming.
So, okay.
That's cool. Okay. Yeah. I use mine I use mine for a Samba server. So I have one that's a Samba server. I have one that is my Pi Hole. So it's a Debian machine running Pi Hole. So it's my DNS server for the network at home. Mm-hmm.
But your MikroTik router is going to fix that, right?
No, the MikroTik has firewall rules that reroute all DNS traffic through the Pi Hole. So if somebody tries to override the DNS settings, they can't. It will automatically reroute them.
So I missed that point in the broadcast on Wednesday because I thought that you were saying that the MikroTik
was I realized that
the Pi Hole was integrated in the router.
Yeah, no.
But is that not true?
An unintentional misspeak in that the MikroTik is a big portion of how the Pi Hole is able to operate in a firm fashion, but it's not actually built into the MikroTik. It's a rule that reroutes the traffic to the Pi Hole.
And I was looking back at my notes at the new Netgear router that I purchased a few months ago to replace the old Netgear router. And you were making a point that the firmware on the router is proprietary and closed. And I get that because I was looking back through my notes and realized that the router would not even come online until it had phoned home. Yeah.
Wow.
That was one, but I mean, I didn't return it. I kept it. I kept it going. Mm-hmm. But, you have to select an admin password, right? But not the default password. And then it phones home. Wow. So, I wonder if China knows my admin credentials. You know, it bugs me. It bugs me when.
Yeah, no, that is a little bit on the odd side for sure.
Don't be at all surprised. And this is a Netgear. I probably shouldn't. I don't care. I've said it already. It was a well-known Netgear router. So
yeah.
But see, here's the thing.
The Netgears traditionally are pretty good for having third-party firmware support as well. I've mentioned Tomato and DDWRT.
Yes,
I know DDWRT usually finds compatibility on Netgear devices. So you could always reflash with an open source router firmware.
So how comfortable, one of the things I would love to do would be to re-enable SSH access. I've talked about that before. I pick a port number that's really high in the range, and then that allows me to SSH in back to the house from any laptop, right? But my question to you is, how solid does the router have to be, consumer or otherwise, or enterprise router? What are the things you look for? Because one of the things I'm thinking of doing is taking the UVerse modem and literally just bridging it. You've talked about that. I've never tried it. But that router, as long as it's not bridged, at least provides some protection. It does not allow, for instance, the SSH incoming connection to come in. I can't do it. I've tried. I can't do it. It seems like the only solution is to bridge the modem to my router, but then the router's taken the brunt of all the hits now because once you bridge the modem, you're not, it's not offering any protection at all, right?
The
can you still hear me?
Yes. Yeah, you went.
My headset just died.
Yep,
and we're right out of time too. But I'll just kind of in final thoughts in response to that BP9. The interesting thing there is by bridging your modem and instead tapping into a proper firewall device, I'm thinking along the lines of the MikroTik.
Sure.
The MikroTik has a specific type of processor and specific software in place that's meant to be able to withstand those types of attacks. So suddenly your modem is not getting the attacks and it's not as good of a quality device. So it's not going to lock up. Instead, your MikroTik, for example, will be able to reject those not wanted packets.
But I could configure the NIC gear router to do the same thing.
Quite possibly, yeah. So where the MikroTik I think is going to stand out in that regard is that rather than DMZing port 22, which basically means opening it up to the world because you want to be able to access it, you can set it to only allow your MAC address or only allow your IP address, or simply say, I'll allow anyone to connect to that port, whatever the public port is, but not if they're from China or anywhere like that. You can set up geographic regions for where is allowed to connect through that port in your MikroTik router. So that's, you know, it's good when you know I'm not going to be traveling outside the US. So I will open this port, but I'm only going to open it for the US. And that's...
So I do trips to Australia every now and again. Mm-hmm. Australia.
There you go. And, so open it up in Australia. Yeah.
And I can open that up for Australia, right?
Yeah.
And only for the duration of the trip. Otherwise, lock it out to everybody except...
The other option, and what I've set up in the past, is having SSH keying set up that is able to communicate.
Absolutely, yeah.
But to actually communicate and authenticate to allow access to the port using that authentication. So,
separate from the SSH authentication.
Yes, so not even for the connection itself, but just to be able to allow access through the port, it has to authenticate using my key. So there's just no limit to the security of something like a MikroTik. So, but that's all the time that we have. I think maybe we should start. We could start one of these with some great nerdy stuff, and then
we could do that.
And then we don't get cut off.
Well, that question came to me. You know,
through the course of the conversation.
Let's re-pick up the conversation in tomorrow.
Tomorrow we'll talk about security.
Yeah.
Have a great afternoon, guys. We'll see you tomorrow on the coffee break. Bye.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye. Take care, everyone.